The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
So it is. And it's a Monday. Welcome to a brand new week. In addition to it being Monday, it's also Women's Day. International Women's Day, the Day of the Women, Girls' Day. I don't know. It's all kinds of stuff happening today. And we will have the cultural historian, Amy Simon, joining us a little later this hour. And she'll explain the difference. Like, what is today? Why is today Women's Day? And what are the different variations and all that stuff? And maybe she'll even give us some fabulous female facts, as she is wont to do. But we got news to start with, because when we last spoke on Friday, it was a giant clusterfuck going on in the Senate. Remember? That's when, let me consult my notes, because I got to tell you, everything is sort of upside down and backwards. Okay. So Friday, when we last spoke, the Senate was in a stalemate, if my calculations are correct, right? Earlier, well, on Thursday, let's back up a little bit, because on Thursday, they voted to basically begin debate. You remember that? So here's how it works. The filibuster in today's parlance just means that you need 60 votes in order to pass any legislation. It used to be the filibuster was pulled out for special occasions, as it were, where the minority party could filibuster a bill. Say they don't have they don't have enough to win, but they do have enough to hold up debate. So they could enact the filibuster. But what they used to have to do is, if they were filibustering, they had to hold the floor. They had to speak. Sometimes they spoke to debate the bill that, they were fighting. Other times they just spoke to hold the floor, to keep this from going to a vote, because they would lose. So during the old-fashioned filibuster, sometimes they'd read the phone book, right? Or then there was the Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of filibuster, where they would actually, or the Bernie Sanders kind of filibuster, where they would talk about the issue at hand, right? But in today's world, a filibuster just means, sorry, you need 60 votes instead of 50 to pass this through the Senate. And as we discussed on Friday, I went into overtime on Friday because this is a really important issue. The onus used to be on the minority party to change minds, to get enough votes to cause the majority party to lose, right? To lose the vote on the case. But that all ended. And so on Friday, I read to you an op-ed written by Norm Ornstein about what they could do to maybe, not do away with the filibuster, but put it back to where it used to be, so that the onus basically is on the minority party to keep the filibuster going. It shouldn't be on the majority party to get 60 votes to win. That's not how the founders, the framers, intended it. So what happened was, on Thursday, they had a vote. I'm all confused here, so if I get one or two things wrong, I'll probably go back and correct it, but bear with me. I'm trying to piece together days worth of cluster fuckedness, right? So the bottom line, what happened. On Saturday afternoon, the bill passed. The American Rescue Plan passed by a vote of 50-49. One Republican Senator Sullivan of Alaska had a funeral, a family funeral to go to. And he chose family over party, and I commend him for that. And the thing is, if it would have made a difference, maybe he would have stayed behind. But if he would have stayed in D.C. and cast his vote, it would have been 50-50. Kamala Harris would have come in her role as Senate president, cast the tie-breaking vote, and the outcome would have been the same. So he saved, you know, an hour or more and, you know, did the right thing by his family. So anyway, what happened was, let me back up. So a day earlier, it was, I believe it was Thursday. On Thursday, when they were going to take the vote to, for the cloture vote to open debate, remember that? It seems so long ago. Senator, and I say that with a hint of disgust in my voice, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin decided he wanted to slow things down because the Senate doesn't move slow enough as it is. So he had hinted the day before, he even said he was going to do this. This is what he said on Wednesday.
I don't want to sound like a leftist, but I'm going to resist. Okay, so the first way I'm going to resist is I'm going to go down and object to the waiving of the reading of the bill. I will make them read their 600 to 700 page bill.
Okay, so he said he's going to object to the waiving of the reading of the bill, because this is how normal operating procedure in the Senate is. You know, they call for the reading of the bill, they waive it, they consider the bill read three times. You've heard them say that, right? And then they move on to the cloture vote. Well, when they got to that point on Thursday, this is what happened.
Mr. President, Madam President.
Mr. Majority Leader.
And Kamala Harris was presiding that
Madam
day.
Madam President, I ask consent to dispense with the reading.
Is there an objection?
Madam President.
Senator from Wisconsin.
Reserving the right to object.
Is he allowed?
One thing that one...
Schumer asks, is he allowed? And he doesn't know. He doesn't know. Nobody. The clerks are telling them what happens next.
I object.
The objection is heard. The clerk will continue the reading.
As the American Rescue Act of 2021...
Okay, so actually what happened there is the clerk began the reading, because Ron Johnson, any one senator, can hold everything up. And he said, nah, I'm not going to waive the reading. I want you to read it. So that started Thursday afternoon. And for the next almost 11 hours, the clerks read the bill, all 620 some odd pages, however long it was. When they got to the end of the reading, it was a little after 2 a.m. Friday morning. But Ron Johnson didn't stick around, nor did any of his Republican colleagues. So when they ended the reading at 2 a.m., well, the only person that was there to step up to a desk and a microphone was Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen. So this is what happened. As they're finishing the reading, you can almost hear the clerk do a mic drop. It's like, we're done with this shit. So here, hold on. Hit the wrong button. Here's what happened.
As necessary to cover or reimburse allowable costs.
You hear?
To prevent,
so the clerk is reading kind of slowly.
Coronavirus incurred.
This is after almost 11 hours.
For costs incurred.
And then he looks up and sees Senator Chris Van Hollen had entered the chamber. Listen to how she speeds up here.
Inapplicability of public services cap. Indian tribes may use.
You see, now Chris Van Hollen's in the room.
From amounts made available under the Education Act of 1965, 20 U.S.C. 7544A1 for activities authorized under Section 6304A2.
They went from moving at this kind of pace.
20 U.S.C. 7544A23 and other related activities.
Boom. Done. Other related activities.
Madam President.
And this is Chris Van Hollen.
Senator from Maryland.
Madam President, I ask unanimous consent that when the Senate completes its business today, it adjourn until 9 a.m. Friday, March 5th.
Okay.
That following the prayer and pledge, the morning hour be deemed expired, the journal of proceedings be approved to date, the time for the two leaders be reserved for their use later
right.
in the day,
okay.
and morning business be closed. Finally, the following morning business, the Senate resumed consideration of H.R. 1319.
This is the bill.
And there be 3 hours of debate.
With
the time equally divided and controlled between the two managers or their designees. And that it be in order for Senator Sanders to offer the First Amendment.
Okay.
Is there objection? Without objection.
No objection, because there were no Republicans there.
Before the Senate, I ask that it stand adjourned under the previous order.
Boom. Done.
The Senate has adjourned until 9 a.m. this morning.
You know, it's so funny. So that was the wee hours of Friday morning, about 2:15 a.m. The clerk finished reading the bill. When he came into the chamber, she sped up, got to the end of it. Van Hollen was right there. He said, OK, we're going to adjourn. We'll be back at 9 in the morning. At which time, you know, the morning prayer and the morning business, and then 3 hours of debate. No objections. So ordered. That's the point that's important here, because they could have had up to 20 hours of debate. Ron Johnson, who wanted to slow things down, really screwed up royally, because, yeah, they delayed it for no good reason at all. They made these poor clerks read all those pages and pages for hours and hours. And then when it was over, there were no Republicans there to do their part of the proceedings. So Chris Van Hollen said, OK, so we'll be back at 9 a.m. We'll debate for 3 hours and then move on from there to the Votorama. So, again, they lost out. The Republicans lost out on an additional 17 hours of debate or stalling that they could have had. OK, so now it's Friday. First Amendment is Bernie Sanders' $15 an hour minimum wage. Now, here's the thing. The parliamentarian had earlier in the week ruled that that provision could not be in the bill if they were going to pass it using reconciliation, which means you only need 51 votes, 50 plus one to pass. But here's the thing. The Senate parliamentarian is an advisory position. She wasn't elected. She's got no like authority built into her position. They're there to explain what they believe the rules call for, but it's not a directive. It's not an order. And as many in Congress pointed out, Kamala Harris could simply have said, we took the parliamentarian's advice under order. We've decided to move ahead anyway. Fine. But she wouldn't do it. Joe Biden wouldn't do it. So Bernie Sanders' amendment would have overridden the advice of the Senate parliamentarian. That's why it was brought up as an amendment. This would have said, OK, we heard the advice. We're good. We're still moving ahead. Unfortunately, seven Democrats and Angus King, who is an independent from Maine, voted no. One of those no votes was Kyrsten Sinema. Now, we've talked about this before. Kyrsten Sinema, who... look, I've got my problems with this woman anyway, but on so many levels was so reprehensible that day. First of all, I'm going to show you a video. And for those of you who are just watching, just listening, not able to, not watching video, just listening via a radio, an audio stream, I will explain to you what's going on here. But let me pull up this video. For those of you who are watching on the video, and I will narrate as we go along. You see, when they're doing the vote on the $15 an hour minimum wage amendment, Bernie Sanders' amendment, there's the picture of the Senate floor, and we're looking at it from the right side of the clerks, where all the clerks sit. And you'll be able to see Kyrsten Sinema come in. I wonder if you can't see the pointer on the screen. Come in from the other side. I guess they called her name. She was out in the cloakroom or wherever. She walks in. Mitch McConnell is standing there talking to somebody else. I can't tell who the other person is. It's a woman on the Senate floor. Kyrsten Sinema, on her way over to the clerks, to the front of the clerk's desk where she could register her no vote, pats Mitch on the back. It's like, hey, check out what I'm about to do. It's really sickening. So here she comes walking in her little, there she waves, pats Mitch on the back and says, listen to this. It says, listen, watch, goes to the front of the desk and does her thumbs down and
Miss
curtsy.
Cinema.
Ugh.
No.
Okay, so she did her thumbs down and curtsy and walked away wearing what appears to be like a Catholic schoolgirl's outfit. I don't know. Look, I don't know what she gets off on. And I'm the last one to tell, you know, talk about dressing professionally. But I dress for the role of the job that I have. She does not belong in the U.S. Senate on any level. Dressed like that, acting like that, what is her fucking problem? I just had to get that in there. So it's the two senators from New Hampshire, Jean Shaheen and Maggie Hassan, Angus King, Kirsten Sinema. I didn't write down the names. The other three were, of course, Joe Manchin. And then the two senators from Delaware, Carper and Coons. Those were the eight who voted against the $15 an hour minimum wage. Just so you know, and you know what to do if you live in any of those states. New Hampshire, Delaware. I don't know what we do about West Virginia. But anyway, so they lost that vote. It was 42 to 58. Okay, because eight Democrats or Angus King caucuses with the Democrats voted no. So, but the thing is, they never closed the vote. So the tally, if you're watching on C-SPAN, which is what I do, had it for hours and hours. And I'm wondering, what the hell's going on? Throughout our whole show on Friday, they were stalled. They were stalled. The vote was held open for almost 10 hours into Friday evening because Joe Manchin was, they were negotiating with Joe Manchin over the unemployment supplement in the final bill. It was supposed to be an additional $400 a week, and it was supposed to go through the end of September, and it was supposed to be the first $10,200 of the unemployment payments were supposed to be tax exempt. That's what Joe Manchin was fighting them about. And apparently the Republicans got into it and they put forth their proposal. And for a while, it looked like Manchin was going to side with the Republicans and throw the whole thing up in the air. This went on for almost 10 hours into Friday night. Finally, at the end of the 10 hours, they announced that they had come to a deal. Joe Manchin, along with the Democrats, agreed to an additional unemployment supplement of $300 a week instead of four. That would go until September 6th instead of 3 weeks longer to the end of September. And yes, they held up the first $10,200 of unemployment compensation is tax exempt. They came to an agreement. And then the question was, well, what next? Because now it's the Voterama. And the Voterama went for another 12 hours or so. The Voterama was going. That's where they offer amendment after amendment. That's part of the thing with reconciliation is the minority party can offer as many amendments as they want. And what they wanted to do was try to get, you know, put the Democrats on the spot and get them to take tough votes. There was nothing there. None of the votes were worse on the Democratic side than all the Republicans voting against the entire thing. Remember, this was a $1.9 trillion bill. During Donald Trump's reign of error, those Republicans all voted for a $1.9 trillion tax cut for very, very wealthy people and corporations. So they didn't object to the money then when it wouldn't have helped anyone. They are objecting to it now that we are a nation in deep financial straits, suffering through a pandemic, people hurting, a foreclosure crisis again on the horizon, an eviction crisis on the horizon, unemployment crisis here. That's what they voted against. They voted for the same amount of money, by the way, just to give wealthy people a tax break. But then, you know, finally, it comes down to it. It's about almost 12:30 Saturday afternoon, right? They had been at it for almost 24 hours. They had been up all night. I guess they took turns going out and taking little naps. But this Votorama went on all through the night, Friday night into Saturday. And it was finally Saturday afternoon at around 12:30 in the afternoon when this happened.
No senator wishes to change the vote. If not, the yeas are 50, the nays are 49. The bill as amended is passed.
Woo-hoo! And you hear the Democrats on the in the Senate burst into applause, right? So this happens. Well, I guess they were all really tired because then they left, right? So they left, but the business of the day was not complete yet. So Chuck Schumer is standing at his desk, and all of a sudden, what did I do wrong? Trump tax cut was $2.3 trillion. Okay, so it was more than the $1.9 trillion. Thank you. The Trump tax cut was larger than this relief bill. The America, what is it called? I'll get you the actual name of it. The pandemic relief bill or something like that it's called. Anyway, so they finish, they pass it. It's historic. I told you it's 50 to 49 because Senator Sullivan from Alaska went to a family funeral instead. And I guess they all left the chamber because the next thing that happens is Chuck Schumer comes in and he's standing at his desk and this happens.
Question is on the motion.
Say aye.
In favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The motion is agreed to. The clerk will report the nomination.
The nomination.
Nomination, Department of Justice. Merrick Brian Garland of Maryland, Attorney General.
You hear this?
I send a cloture motion to the desk.
The clerk will report the cloture motion.
Yeah.
Cloture motion. We, the undersigned senators, in accordance with the provisions of Rule 22 of the Standing Rules of the Senate, do hereby move to bring to a close the debate on the nomination of Executive Calendar Number 27, Merrick Brian Garland, to be Attorney General, signed by 18 senators.
I ask consent the reading of the names be waived.
Okay. He wants to get moving.
I move to proceed to legislative session.
Yeah.
The question is on the motion.
Say aye.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes appear to have it.
The ayes have it.
The motion is agreed to.
The motion is agreed to. There was nobody left in the chamber to say no. Republicans left. I guess they were tired. They needed their sleepy time. Tom Cotton has spent the better part of the last week blocking Merrick Garland's cloture vote to close debate and come to a vote on Merrick Garland to be Attorney General. He was single-handedly holding it up, which you are able to do if you're a senator. They screwed up again. And Chuck Schumer was able to say, all right, motion to end to cloture, to end debate and schedule the vote. Is basically what happened, and it went right through. He also similarly scheduled the vote, closed cloture on Marsha Fudge's nomination to be, I think she's Housing and Urban Development, if I remember correctly. So that one's done too. Chuck Schumer simply said, let's do it. Nobody there to object. Boom, we're done. I'm normally not very complimentary of Chucky Schmucky, but he took advantage of the situation at hand and got this stuff done because none of the Republicans stuck around to take care of business. They all just wanted a nap. So that happened. Wow. It still leaves the problem of the filibuster and, you know, Joe Manchin. And so we will see. Tomorrow, I'm going to speak with Norm Ornstein, who wrote that op-ed for The Washington Post about what can be done. The thing is, Joe Manchin has been quite vehement in saying, I will never never vote to overturn the filibuster. It's what our country was founded on. It wasn't. The filibuster is not in the Constitution anywhere, but whatever, Joe, whatever you say. But this is Joe Manchin yesterday on Meet the Press when the other Chuck asked him about the filibuster.
It's basically designed, Chuck, to make sure the minority has input.
Right.
That's exactly our founding fathers. And now, if you want to make it a little bit more painful, make him stand there and talk, I'm willing to look at any way we can, but I'm not willing to take away the involvement of the minority. I've been in the minority. I've been in the majority.
Okay.
And I can tell you, the respect I have on both sides when I've been there should be, I got something to say. Listen to me.
Yeah.
And I want that to happen.
Okay.
Well,
Senator, the filibuster was never an idea of the founding fathers. That
there
is a Senate rule that was created by senators later. In fairness, it's not a founding father idea. Let me ask you this. You didn't directly answer my question about would you be willing to go a reconciliation route for election only bills like H.R. 1?
Let me say this. I'm not willing to go into reconciliation until we at least give bipartisanship or get working together or allow the Senate to do its job.
Yeah.
Just by assuming that, hey, they'll never work with us. That's the other side.
Right.
This
well,
is tribal.
Right.
Republicans will never agree on anything.
Right.
Or Democrats will never
agree.
He
knows that.
I don't subscribe to that. I don't buy into that. There's no need for us to go to reconciliation until the other process has failed. That means the normal process of a committee,
right,
a hearing, amendments, Chuck, and that's where I am.
Well, it sounds like if the Republic, then what you're saying is if Republicans continue to be unified in opposition and don't have an open mind, then you may change your mind?
No, but...
Well, I'm not going to change my mind on the filibuster. I will change my mind if we need to go to a reconciliation to where we have to get something done once I know they have process into it. But I'm not going to go there until my Republican friends have the ability to have their say also.
Okay.
And I'm hoping they'll get involved to the point to where we have 10 of them that will work with 50 of us or 15 of them
that will
work
with
45 of us.
That's not going to happen.
However, you know, whatever it takes the majority, and it takes 60 when we're moving it through normal process, I'm for that. You said something about the founding fathers. Why did Washington have bicameral? Why do you want two bodies?
Okay. And actually, that wasn't the clip I thought it was, because at one point he said, I guess we should make it a little more painful, right? You see, Joe Manchin did every one of the Sunday shows yesterday. They call it the full Ginsburg. For a former Supreme Court nominee who went on all the Sunday shows, not Ruth. It was one who didn't make it through. So the full Ginsburg is the name of that. And Joe Manchin, poor Joe Manchin, he's a little confused because then he's on State of the Union on CNN with Jake Tapper, and he says this.
And that's what we tried to do. When we put the cap on, Chuck,
We put the cap on, Chuck, to which Jake Tapper says,
I know you're doing the round of shows today, but just to remind you, I'm Jake, not Chuck.
I wish I had the video to play for you, because as Jake Tapper is telling Joe Manchin, I'm Jake, not Chuck, Joe Manchin's face is like a blank slate, like he doesn't understand what's being said to him. This is the problem with so much of the Senate. Just like, you know, the Republicans didn't show up to make sure they had as many hours of debate as they were entitled to and to keep up their, their stalling of these nominees. I wish they were always that incompetent. I wish they were always as incompetent as they are idiotic. Let's put it that way. All right. There's a whole lot more news, but I wanted to fill you in on the sequence of events that went. And then, of course, Bernie Sanders. My daughter, this is, you know, her name is Allison, and I have her Allison ringtone for her, and she knows when I'm on the air, and she always calls me when I'm on the air. I'm not taking her call right now. Anyway, so Bernie, when the bill finally passed, he celebrated. In fact, the video when they're announcing the roll call that it has passed, he goes around fist bumping members of the Democratic caucus. But afterwards, he spoke, and here's a little bit of what Bernie said.
We probably have more unity today in America around this package than anything that I can remember. Polls vary, 65-70% of the American people understand the crisis we are facing. They want us to respond.
Yep.
This legislation is enormously popular, not just from progressives, not from moderates, but from Republicans as well, depending on the poll, 40, 50% more Republicans support it because they can't afford to pay their rent. They can't afford to go to the doctor. They understand the government has got to help. So the real question here, and President Biden has raised this issue, is we believe in unity. We believe in bringing people together. How does it happen that when 40, 50% of Republicans support this legislation, we can't get one vote from Republicans here? What's going on?
Yeah.
And the answer is, I'm afraid that my Republican colleagues have moved so far to the right that they have lost contact with the needs of working families.
Okay. So Bernie's got it right again. All right, that brings us up to date. So stick around after the show. I'll play you the extended What's News. You get the rest of the news. But for now, we're going to take a very, very quick time out because we have to come back on the other side with Amy Simon and celebrate International Women's Day. Or is it just Women's Day or Girls' Day? Or we'll find out. All right. So I think Progressive Voices is in a break. For everyone still with me, I'm going to play you a little song celebrating the day from our pal, Bruce W. Nelson, also known as Mangy Fetlocks. Take it away, Mangy, sir. Here we go. All right. Take it away, Mangy Fetlocks.
Howdy, folks. Mangy Fetlocks here with a little song for International Women's Day. That's March 8th today. To the women in my life, I thank you kindly. For you make this world a far, far better place. You accept me about exactly as you find me. While enhancing both my health and personal space. You are kind and you are caring and creative. At your manner of construction, I rejoice. And when asked to choose between you or my own kind, that's men, overall, for company, you'd be my choice. Happy International Women's Day. Geez, we're glad you're around.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
I am back. I know. Hold on. During that little break, Amy called me. Let me do this first. Let's do this because we can. Boy, best laid plans and all that stuff. Here we go.
It's time for Amy Simon of She's History, the most dangerous women in American history. Then and now.
Cause I'm a woman.
All right. In just a moment, Amy Simon's going to join us. But before we get there, let me play for you a little bit of her new something special she's got going on for Women's History Month. This is the intro to Speechifying.
Contributing to the progress of humankind since the beginning of time. But we've mostly been left out of the narrative. This inspired Molly Murphy McGregor, a 26-year-old Los Angeles history teacher, to campaign for what is now Women's History Month. I had the honor of meeting Molly, and she told me this story. It started in 1972 when a boy in her high school U.S. history class asked her, "What is the women's movement?" He had just seen the brand new Ms. magazine. Now, this was a Friday afternoon, and Molly said she was glad because she needed the weekend to come up with the answer. So she said to the boy, "That's a good question." She went home and searched her own personal extensive library of history books and found one book called Freedom Ferment with one chapter on Seneca Falls, which in 1848 was the city where the very first women's rights convention was held. But that was it. So a seed was planted. and Molly began her journey, which ended in 1987 when Congress declared March as Women's History Month. Every year, the president issues a special proclamation. Isn't it amazing what one woman can do? Well, here are a few more amazing, persistent, courageous, trailblazing, fearless, fabulous females who made and make our lives better by making history.
Okay, so there's Amy Simon in her video intro to speechifying. Amy Simon, can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I can only hear you through my headphones, but I can hear
okay,
you.
Okay, so put the headphones on. You can put the headphones on. That's okay. And I can hear you just fine. Best laid plans and all that. We even tested everything earlier. So Amy Simon, she is a cultural historian. She is the woman behind She's History, the Most Dangerous Women in America Then and Now. And the new project that is launched just now for Women's History Month and today's big Women's Day called Speechifying. And I just played you at the very beginning, your sort of intro to the thing. But Amy, let's start off by saying, first of all, welcome back to the show. We miss you.
Oh, thanks. I miss you, too.
So this is Women's History Month, and today is International Women's Day, but it's also what?
Okay, so March 8th yes. is Women's International Day, which actually started in 1909 in New York City. It was organized by the Socialist Party. It was called, like, Women's Day to bring attention to the labor movement.
Okay.
And then in 1911, there was another conference in Copenhagen about the labor, and it was all about women's rights. And then, there's always a million different dates and the way things evolve. And then it was finally 1917 when the women in Russia won the right to vote and they got suffrage. Suffrage means the right to vote. They declared it a national holiday. And that's Women's International Day, which is all about women's rights. It's about women's equality. Then there's Women's History Month, which is what my new show called Speechifying is about. And I talk about how that happened. And it's all related. But also, as another little side part, people get mixed up because in October, there's International Day of the Girl Child. And that was created by the United Nations.
Okay.
And that's, you know, they're all pretty much about a lot of the same things. The International Day of the Girl Child is obviously a little bit more specific. So there's a little bit of history about that stuff. But the thing I'm doing now, speechifying, is what I call a silver lining of the pandemic. And I want to warn you that my cats are all over the place.
That's good.
They might jump into the screen.
Okay, no problem.
they're called Wreaking in Havoc for a reason. Get down.
They're called what? What are their names? What in Havoc?
Wreaking and Havoc.
Oh, and Havoc.
I mean, their real names are Lulu and Lola, but they're mostly Wreaking in Havoc. So, you know, last year was the first year since 2009 that I haven't performed She's History for Women's History Month.
And I know.
You know, of course, everything stopped. And last year was a huge year because it was the 100th anniversary of women winning the vote. The 19th Amendment was passed in 1920. So all you know, great plans went away. And I'm thinking a couple months ago, you know, after getting over a little bit of the exhaustion of the pandemic and being isolated, and I'm lucky I have a job. I don't have the virus. I'm not on a food line. I have many things to be thankful for.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, what am I going to do? I'm not doing live theater. Many organizations have asked me to perform the show on Zoom, and I just didn't think this particular show works on Zoom. Although I support lots of other Zoom theater.
Okay.
And I belong to a theater company called Theater West, which is the longest operating theater in Los Angeles.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So about 2 months ago, I started thinking, what can I do? I've got to do something. And I thought, I actually bought a website a few years ago called Historicals, where I wanted to create something for schools. So I created the show of speeches. And I started to collect lots of speeches. There's a million speeches of fantastic women that we don't know anything about.
Right.
And somewhere in the middle of, it was actually in the middle of February that I finally got the energy. Literally, it was, you know, I'm just not as motivated like most of us are. We're sort of zapped of our normal energy.
Right.
But then somehow I just got motivated and I have this wonderful colleague named Karen Reagan George. We've worked together before on many things. She's a Renaissance woman, an actress, a writer, and all this. I said, Karen, I have this great idea. I want to do a show of speeches and get actresses to reenact and perform speeches. I said, could you do it with me? And she's a working actress. She lives in Georgia. And I like to say she has something to do with Georgia turning blue. Okay. Because she's very political. And she said, I'll work with you on it. So she basically put this thing together with me. So I found all the speeches. I took a couple days off from work. It was so inspiring. 4 days of just living inside of all these speeches. Wow. And I knew several that I wanted to do right away. And I'll talk to you about them if you like. And then Karen, we hired actresses from my theater company and a few others. We found, there's a million wonderful actresses that I couldn't use because I started out with like 30 speeches. And Karen's like, I don't think so. Zoom fatigue, there's too much. It's right. going to be a virtual right. show. So we whittled it down. And Karen and the actresses are all self-taping, you know, here in Los Angeles, or any actor around the country now have been self-taping. So they they had a rehearsal with Karen. They self-taped, they sent her their speech, and then she learned iMovie and put the whole thing together.
Wow.
And that's what speechifying is. And our theater company, Theater West, said they would present it. They gave us a 30-minute time limit because we don't think people will, be engaged much longer. We pushed it to 35, so it's a 35-minute piece. And I'm so proud of it. It's extremely powerful. It was fantastic to work on. And that's speechifying, the first one, because I'm thinking I got to do more of these.
Right.
There's so many that I left out.
It's so good. Do you have any favorites in this edition of speechifying?
Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of, do I have a favorite? Well,
I know.
First of all, I knew, for instance, that Abigail Adams, Remember the Ladies, which is the most iconic letter, that was going to be a speech. I knew that. And the actress just watch it and weep, basically. It's fantastically done. I knew I was going to use Susan B. Anthony's speech when she was arrested in 1872. Mm-hmm. I do that in my play where she basically tells off the judge. When I do it in my show, I literally tell off the judge. But this actress was much smarter than me and was respectfully telling off the judge. So it's a whole different performance, but wonderful.
Right.
I knew I wanted to do the Hillary Clinton Beijing 1995 speech when she uh-huh. said, women's rights are human's rights and
human rights.
It's so, to read it is so powerful. I knew I was going to have Alice Paul, who was the co-author of the Equal Rights Amendment and also had everything to do with the 19th Amendment getting passed. In my full cast version of She Is History, I do a whole scene where she goes on a hunger strike and they force feed her, but there's a speech about it.
Oh, yep.
And so we hear her talk that speech. Unbelievably powerful. I knew I was going to have Malala Yousafzai when she addressed the United Nations. And I have that speech. So I guess I can't say I have a favorite. There's plenty more. But what really blew my mind was Stacey Abrams, because I knew she was going to be in it.
Uh-huh.
And her work was the one I'm the least familiar with, because I'm really very familiar, obviously, with a lot of women in history. My goal is always to turn everyone on to the women that we know. Like this particular speechifying opens with Kamala Harris.
Right.
And we also have Shirley Chisholm. And, we have people that we know like that. And that was Karen. I mean, I knew that I was going to do then and now. I knew I'd have those people. Of course, we'd have Kamala Harris. I mean, she made amazing history. So reading Stacey Abrams' speeches, oh, boy. And it was so challenging to cull, what I wanted, because, you can go on forever. Some of these speeches are 10 minutes, and several of them were when they were addressing universities.
Right.
Gloria Steinem's speech when she addressed Vassar College in, the 1970s. They're all just, each one.
And the one that stood out the most, I mean, they were all powerful. But the one that made me sit back and go, whoa, I need to listen to that again, was Sojourner Truth. Oh, my God, was she good. And I was thinking, if you don't mind, I'd play a couple of minutes of it.
Please.
Okay. So who is this actress? Tell us that.
Karen Bankhead. An amazing, amazing actress who is also part of Theater West.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So I think I'm cued into it. We'll just listen to a few minutes of, and here's how it starts with the slide up of.
Right. And if I may interrupt a moment,
yes.
For before each speech, I did create a slide with a picture of the actual woman
uh-huh.
and some of their accomplishments.
Right.
So, okay, go on then.
So there you go. So that's Sojourner Truth, and here's that segment.
Well, children, where there is so much racket, there must be something out of kilter. I think that twixt the Negroes of the South and the women out the North, all talking about rights, the white men will be in a fix pretty soon. But what's all this here talking about? That man over there says that women need to be helped into carriages and lifted over ditches and to have the best place everywhere. Nobody ever helps me into carriages or over mud puddles or gives me any best place. And ain't I a woman? Look at me. Look at my arm. I have plowed and planted and gathered into barns and no man could head me. And ain't I a woman? I could work as much and eat as much as a man when I could get it. And bear the lash as well. And ain't I a woman? I have borne 13 children and seen most all sold off to slavery. And when I cried out with a mother's grief, and none but Jesus heard me, and ain't I a woman? Then they talk about this thing in the head. What's this they call it? That's it, honey. Intellect. What's that got to do with a women's right or Negro's rights? If my cup won't hold but a pint and yours holds a quart, wouldn't you be mean not to let me have a little half measure full? Then that little man in black over there, he says women can't have as much rights as men because Christ wasn't a woman. Where did your Christ come from? Where did your Christ come from? From God and a woman. Man had nothing to do with him. If the first woman God ever made was strong enough to turn the world upside down all alone, these women ought to be able to turn it back and get it right side up again. And now they is asking to do it. The men better let them. Obliged to you for hearing me. And now, old Sojourner, ain't got nothing more to say.
That was amazing. That was just amazing.
But let me tell you, I want to tell your listeners a little bit about that speech, because there's a lot of controversy, actually. And just today, one of my wonderful actresses, Janine Anderson, who plays Alice Paul in this, she sent me a link. Now, I knew, I've been doing this show for 11 years, and I knew when I first started researching Sojourner Truth. She made this speech in 1851 in Akron, Ohio, when they were just, the women's rights conventions or meetings were just starting to happen. The first one was in 1848 in Seneca Falls, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton stood up and said women need to vote and opened a whole can of worms. And starting then, there were all these women's rights meetings. So there was this one at a church in Akron, Ohio in 1851, filled with white men. And it was being led by a woman named Frances Gage. And the men were like, why do women need any rights? They have the best place everywhere. Well, the women get carried into carriage, in carriages and over mud puddles and all this stuff. And Sojourner Truth, who was a preacher, and by the way, Sojourner Truth means traveling preacher. Mm-hmm. Her real name is Isabella Bomfrey. But she was a slave to a Dutch family. And the truth is, she actually, nobody ever heard her speak. First of all, okay, we don't have tape recordings of any of this.
Right.
But she grew up in a Dutch home. So the story is, and I have her narrative. I mean, we have her narrative that she told somebody, but we never heard her speak. But she spoke with a Dutch accent, probably, because that's where she grew up, in New York. But this speech, this Ain't I a Woman speech, when she went to this church and was invited by Frances Gage, who organized this women's meeting, and she comes and she walks up the aisle, and she's very tall and very imposing. This is how the story goes. And people are screaming, you know, they're calling her the N-word and go home. And Frances Gage is like, let the woman speak. And the thing about Sojourner Truth that I've learned from research is that she had such a way, and Karen Bankhead so captured it, because she just engaged everybody. And she didn't yell at anybody. She was just charming and wonderful, and she had an amazing career. But the point is, there are two speeches.
The story goes that that speech was transcribed by a friend of hers named Marius Robinson. And he was at the meeting, so he wrote the speech down. But then, months later, Francis Gage rewrote the speech, added things, and had it published. So there's two versions of the speech. For me, we'll never know everything exactly, and it doesn't matter to me all that much because we're still getting her story out and how amazing she was. But that's just one controversy. I mean, there's so much misinformation and lack of information about so many women in history.
There is. And you've been doing this. So for those who don't know, Amy Simon, I mean, you mentioned you've been doing She's History, performing it every year in March since 2009. I can't believe it's been that long. And I remember when you first told me, I have this idea. You know, you have two daughters, you raised them, and one of them came home from school to do a report, had to do a report on for Women's History Month, and she chose Cher.
Cher or Janet Jackson.
Right. And you realize that we don't teach women's history in school.
Yeah. So that and also Hillary had been running now. Okay, so 2009, I actually wrote I started working on this in 2007, wow. But I didn't know it was going to be a play.
Right.
I started just writing stories about women who ran for president. Hillary ran was the very first thing I ever wrote. And I wrote about some other women who had run for president. And I performed it at a story salon, which was a very popular and remains a popular performance art here in Los Angeles and around the country. There's story words, you know, all kinds of things. And I stood up and read this story I wrote about women who ran, and people were so responsive, and that ended up leading. Also, I couldn't find a job, you know. If I had been able to find a job, because I got divorced, my husband left the country, I couldn't get a job. It was 2008, and what did I have? I had this idea to do a play. I had come off doing Cheerios in my underwear, which I hardly made any money from that play. You don't make much money in theater. But that's how that whole thing kind of happened. That's how I ended up doing She's History.
Right.
I became obsessed. What actually happened, and I don't think I told this story, and I don't tell it in any of my plays, that I was going through this really bad divorce, and I was shocked at how badly I was being treated. Like, women were not being treated right. So I said, I'm going to go back to the library where I did all my research on Cheerios and motherhood, and I'm going to find out. And I go to the library, and I ask, I need to find a book on women's rights. And they send me to this one aisle that's just one aisle with women's, you know, stuff. And I find this one book called Women's Progress in America. And it's all alphabetical. And I open it up to find women's rights. And I find Victoria Woodhull, W.
Yes.
The first woman to run for president. And her speech is in Speechifying when she announced herself as president in 1872.
As a candidate for president. Yeah.
Pardon?
As a candidate for president.
Yes, yep. She ran. Yeah, she was the one of the first, and she asked Frederick Douglass to be her running mate.
Right.
She started the Equal Rights Party. I mean, her story alone is just, they all are, every one of these stories. It was so hard. I wanted to put in the story about Belva Lockwood, who was the first. She ran for president in 1884 and 1888. And some people say she's the first one because Victoria Woodhull wasn't 35, and you have to be 35 to run for president. But if you listeners Google the first woman to run for president, Victoria Woodhull will pop up. But Belva Lockwood was the first woman to be a lawyer in front of the Supreme Court. Her story alone, I mean, and I couldn't fit them all in, which is why I'll be doing this until I die.
Yes. And this became like a labor of love. So She's History started first with these stories. Then it turned into a play, a one woman show. Then it became a multi-character show. You also have a program because it started out because they don't teach women's history in school, certainly not in high school, that you have a school program to go along with it.
Well, I've done the solo show, which I've tailored for school. I've done it for third graders, for sixth graders, for eighth graders. I've done it for middle school. I haven't done it yet for high school. And yes, I was working on a version of She's History where the students improvise. I never got that finished, though, by the way, because then I ended up getting a job. And I was like, I can still pay my rent now. But this could be, you know, I'm always trying to get the students to understand something about women's history. And to be honest, it's very hard to be booked into schools, even though I've done several over the years. Mm-hmm. They don't have the money, and it's much harder. People are always shocked. Why isn't this in the school? So I think Speechifying is something that'll be a better, you know, but there's really nothing like theater, you know. No. A speech is
but
great.
But you know what?
Are wonderful.
But that reading, for instance, of Sojourner Truth, as people in the chat room too were saying, they were entranced. I mean, that was brilliantly done. And like I said, the other ones, you know, appealed to me too, but that one stopped me in my tracks. Like, whoa, hold on. What is this? I need to watch this. She was great. So now this is just out. It's on YouTube. I posted it in the chat room. I'll put it on the blog. I tweeted it out. So it's just up now.
It's streaming on the Theater West, my theater company in Los Angeles. It's streaming on their YouTube website.
Got it.
You just go to theaterwest.org and it will take you right there. And I'm streaming it all through March. And who knows what will happen after that, you know. It was so experimental. I have to tell you, we had like 2 weeks to put it together.
Wow.
Karen Reagan George, I mean, she worked on it like basically 18 hours a day. She was just working on it the entire time because, you know, I said, we're never going to get it done by March 1st, and we don't have to. It's not like you're opening a show one night. It's going to launch all month. This is my first foray into virtual anything. And, you know, I mean, I'm really glad it worked out. We learned a lot along the way, and I look forward to the next one. But, yeah, you can just go to theaterwest.org or sheshistory.com. It's on my website.
Oh, is it? Because
I
looked this. I didn't see it this morning. I got your link that you sent out, so that's how I watch it. But I will also put it on my blog today with today's show. So it's out there. It's on YouTube, so we'll make sure you can see it. So this, you know, this is the reality in COVID times. I'm lucky, I guess, in that I got my first dose of the vaccine. You're in LA where things are just crazy and you can't even get a vaccine yet. Huh?
I'm not eligible yet. And there are people that there's scams going on. And there are some legitimate, you know, earlier I've heard of people over the past month or two that they'd wait online for 4 hours for leftovers. And, you know, that's fine. Don't let it go to waste. But I don't have 4 hours during the day because I'm lucky that I have a job. But yeah, it's crazy.
It's hard. It's crazy, crazy times.
But we're a big state, you know, we are huge. So we have a lot of ground to cover, a lot of people to shoot up. So
yeah. And, well, you know, and every state is different. And I don't even know what the answer is. Look, I'm down here in crazy land with a guy that, you know, who I call Governor Death Sentence, who now, according to the polling, you know, the Trumpers, he's their number two.
I heard. And did you see what happened in Colorado? 800 nutty students got together for a party.
Oh, God.
In Boulder.
Oh, no. In Boulder. Oh, my God. I love Boulder, Colorado. Well, I'm here in Florida where spring break is upon us, and everything's open at 100%.
Yeah.
Thank you. So this is why I don't leave the house. Just insane. Yeah. So, Amy, I was going to say, do you have any big, plans for International Women's Day? But I guess you're going to hang out.
Yes, I took the day off from work
to
so
be
that
with
I
us.
Can come on your show, Nicole.
Thank you.
My big plan today.
Yay. So, everybody, what you need to do is visit sheshistory.com. Sheshistory.com. You've got all kinds of fabulous female facts there.
Not to interrupt, but since we have just a few minutes left, I did want to mention that there were several more women that I didn't get to talk about. And one that I want to bring up because I love her and she's always so relevant. Her name is Margaret Chase Smith.
Yes.
She was a Republican senator in the 1950s from Maine who ran for president. She got as far as the San Francisco convention and lost to Barry Goldwater. But what she's very, very famous for is she stood up on the Senate floor in the 1950s and read what she wrote called the Declaration of Consciousness speech. And your listeners could Google it, where she ripped them all a new, you know what? Oh, I could say it because
yes, you can. Yep.
She ripped the whole Senate a new asshole for not standing up to McCarthy. The whole speech was about McCarthyism. Wow. And it's famous. I mean, people that are into this kind of thing, it's as iconic as what Elizabeth Cady Stanton wrote in 1848, which was the Declaration of Sentiments, when she started the first women's convention in 1848 in Seneca Falls. And the only reason she had it in Seneca Falls was because she had two little boys that were hellions and she didn't want to schlep them anywhere. So she made everybody come to her and they had the first women's convention where they created the Declaration of Sentiments, which was based on the Declaration of Independence. You know, the founding fathers' little list of 18 grievances against King George. She just substituted men for King George, all men and women are created equal, which is what Nancy Pelosi said when she became the Speaker of the House. And that speech is in Speechifying as well.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
So,
Yeah. Right. So there's so many women that are just brave, what they went through and sacrificed and lost their children, their homes, their lives. And in Susan B. Anthony's speech, which I've done in my play, women were hanged. They were taxed. They went to prison. I mean, what women have gone through so that we could do what we do. And that's kind of what
gets And here we are. And we still don't have an equal rights amendment.
It's getting close, really, really close.
Let's hope. We'll see. We'll see. We do have a female vice president, though. So
yes.
There's that.
Yay.
All right. Amy Simon, find her at cheesehistory.com. Thank you, honey.
Thank you, honey.
Check out Speechifying. I will link to it from the blog at NicoleSandler.com. Thank you so much. Happy
Anytime,
Women's
doll.
Day. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye. And with that, we're done. thank you for listening. Tomorrow, we'll talk filibuster. All right. See you then. Bye.